we are a very powerful democratic country. Very strong democratic tradition. I don't think that there are such strong democratic institutions anywhere else.
Ashok Jhunjhunwala, professor of electrical engineering at the Indian Institute of Technology in Madras, explores the factors that have contributed to and characterized the rise of India over the past decade and the challenges that lie ahead for the world's largest democracy. I'm Colin McClay, Managing Director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School. In this edition of Audio Berkman, Professor Jhunjhunwala offers his unique perspective on this process, and in particular, the role of new technologies, policies, and business models. Through his work creating information and communication technologies, incubating startups, collaborating with national and international companies, advising on national technology policy, and preparing the engineers and leaders for tomorrow, Professor Jhunjhunwala has become a true academic entrepreneur, helping shape the present and the future of his university, his nation, and indeed the developing world. Audio Berkman is a production of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School.
I'm going to talk about India. And when I asked my friend Colin, that I'm going to talk about India, he says, well, everybody knows about India and everybody knows about what is happening in India. And yet I thought that since I lived there and have for the last 20 years participated, I'll say, in trying to change India, I thought that I will try to give you a different perspective. Some of what has happened, some of what we feel are the issues, some of the challenges, this is what I'm going to talk about. So I've titled it very briefly, very brief talk, Leveraging India as India Stands Up Through Innovations in Technologies, Business Models and Policies. First, just a few signs about changing India. The sign, before I talk about it, I think this one slide, I have used it for the last several years, really captures, in some sense, India's billion people in a very different manner. It actually gives you the household income per month, both for the urban household and the rural household. And the point that important point that comes out that, yes, India is a very large population and therefore has a tremendous potential, provided you understand what is their monthly income. Their monthly income of urban household is no more than $200. If you aim at anything more than $200, you are really talking about 4 to 5% of India's urban income, urban population. And you just, then it becomes like any other country. Similarly, when you go to rural India, you need to really focus at sub-$100 per month. These are the household income. This kind of captures, once one understands this and sort of says, well, what can be done in a country which has this kind of incomes, things start changing. And I'll say the last 12 to 15 years, India has changed immensely. And probably the change that has been most visible is in terms of mobile or telephone in India. I remember that in 1994, we were struggling at 7 million telephones, 8 million telephones. We're adding about 500,000 telephones a year, and that also with great difficulty. And in fact, the Tenet group that Colin talked about started with a vision statement saying that we want to see India get 100 million telephones. And it looked absolutely impossible at that kind of time frame. The point is that today we have crossed it. We are touching 150 million. What is more important is that it happened when we figured out that the capital in infrastructure expenses, CapEx, is brought down to a level like $100 per line, with handset prices being anywhere from $50 to $100 to $200, such that services can be available at under 2 cents per minute, an average revenue of $7 per month. This is key. If we looked at average revenue of even $15, the number 150 million would have shrunk to 20 million. If you would have looked at $25, as is there in most of the other countries, the number would have shrunk back to 10 million. The point is, at the time this whole thing started, first of all, people sort of said nobody will ever make money at $7 average revenue per user. The The point is that today, not one but multiple companies are making huge amount of money at delivering services at $7 average revenue per user, less than 2 cents per minute. And today we are adding 5 million subscribers per month. April was the fifth month, straight month, where we crossed 5 million subscribers addition. So we are run rate of something like 65 to 70 million subscribers per year. We are the number one market in the world. Nobody could imagine something like this. And this is not something that has happened only with telephony. In fact, way back in 92, 93, we were stuck in terms of television at 10 million television. And in 2 years' time frame, it went to 100 million. And it happened because of a very interesting thing. There was a television set introduced by a local company at $50. It is a black and white television. I'm not saying that everybody bought that television, but the 20 million people bought that television, and then there were people who bought $300, and there were people who bought $600, and we had 100 million television in no time. And we have the cable television revenue of under $2 per month. And at that, the whole, if you can make a business work at that, you can actually change things. And entertainment industry has become one of the biggest in India. The challenge continues. In fact, going forward, if one looks at the next 400 million telephony, one is looking at half a cent per minute and $2 average revenue per user. And everybody will sort of say, anybody who runs a business sort of say, how can you run businesses which can make money at $2 average revenue per user? Because you're trying to suddenly address household incomes which are less than $60 per month. You can't think of less more than $2. And this is where the, not just the technology, but business innovation is coming. I'm not going to talk in detail about this, but this change that has taken place, the kind of technology and kind of business innovation in telecom that has taken place, which is today making money at $7 average revenue per user, targeting $2 average revenue per user. These are kind of changes that one needs to really start looking at. Some of the very interesting concepts are emerging. Not enough study is being done now. Right now is the time to really look at it. This is not the only thing. If you look at airline industry, I remember that first 20 years, I never got into an aircraft. Upper middle class person could not even dream of getting onto an aircraft. Today, its passengers carrying capacity is doubling, tripling every few months. And the place is crowded. You can, at something close to $40, $35, you can fly from end to end. And it is just totally changing. Of course, you need to book that in advance and things like that. In fact, this change is so visible today that the first time the trains which used to carry most of the passengers had to go and reduce their fare to compete with the airlines. Nobody could imagine that in India, trains will try to compete with the airlines. And of course, we have a very serious problem with airport infrastructure. Those of you who haven't flown recently to India, just in your next trip, you'll see that. But I think we'll solve those problems. The point is, India is changing. IT-enabled services is what everyone knows quite a bit about it. I think most of you must have read this book or heard of this book, The World is Flat. And I remember meeting David Freeman last year and talking to him and asked him that, well, fine, you are talking about how people in Bangalore today can compete with the people in Bay Area and getting the same job, but you haven't seen it yet. What will happen when the 700 million rural people starts getting onto this bandwagon? Today, this change that you are talking about and you're writing about is about the 200 million Indians who are suddenly living in these big cities are starting to compete with those in the West. What will happen when the next 700 million people get in? And that's a kind of change that we are seeing. It's not a dream anymore. It's something that we are seeing is going to happen. Let me talk about something that's not as visible, not as commonly known. For example, I don't know how many of you know that we have 400,000 engineering graduates every year, 1,500 engineering colleges. Now, this change has taken place in the last 20 years. When I went back to India and started teaching there, we had 100 engineering schools having 25,000 students, totally. Today, there are 400,000 students. Now, sure, quality is a big problem. In fact, quality was the reason why opening up of the education was not taking place. And quality continues to be a problem. But The point is suddenly it has opened up. It has given opportunity to large number of people. Even if they don't get good facilities and good teachers, they are able to work hard to try to become good engineers. So this increase in the human resources, which is driving growth in India. In fact, all the growth that you are seeing has come as a result of something like this. That 400,000 engineering graduates coming out every year. Very often, I think in India also, of course, also in Western media, one very often talks down on the politics of India. And so I say, politics is an obstacle to everything. All of us also have become are very fashionable saying that, well, politics is something that is a big, big obstacle. But if I look at India and look at anywhere else in the world, I wonder whether politics is really as much of an obstacle. I mean, one particular example I give, and it's a very important example that has happened in the last 10 years. In Europe, there was this, for telecom, there was a 3G license, wireless licenses. And what happened there, that someone did a wrong calculation and the bids were huge bid, extremely huge bid. The point is that those bids were done by open tender process and all that. And once the companies committed to it, well, they had to just go and give that particular amount of money to the government. Whether they went down or not, nobody bothered. And if you see the whole slowdown in telecom in the West, particularly in the Europe, took place as a result of this huge 3G licenses which were based on certain hypes. Now, we made a similar mistake in India. In 94, when we were opening up, somebody had miscalculated. They looked at the 300 million middle class. They forgot the amount of incomes that they had and calculated as $30 average revenue per user, and the bids were huge amount. And they were open bids by the companies. How do you really write them off in a democratic setup? Anybody who tries to write it off would be immediately accused of corruption and things like that. Well, in India, in 1999, driven by a set of intellectuals, academia, the government formed that committee and came up with a recommendation to write that off, convert that into revenue share, and we make the changes. I think in a democratic setup, such changes you don't see taking place anywhere. So I don't see politics as much an obstacle. It's as probably as much an obstacle as anywhere else, but it's not something particular about India. We, of course, make plenty of mistakes, but I find that in India, we are much more ready to correct in the nick of time, and this is something that we have seen. Since Colin talked about, let me briefly talk about the Tenet Group. The Tenet Group today consists of about 18 faculty members who happen to do their master's and PhD out here, went back in India to try to make a difference. And we started incubating companies in the university. We talked about economic growth. We talked about social development. And today we have about 14, 15 companies, 1,400 engineers. And we started with a very simple vision, as we said in 1994, that we want to see India get 100 million telephones. Once we kind of recognized that, we, on the one hand, worked at the policy level, and at the other hand, we started working at the technology level. We recognized that the capital expenses in putting a telephone is the primary bottleneck in getting something like this. And the local loop, the copper local loop, was the primary bottleneck. We created the concept of wireless and local loop, created a company called Midas. And the interesting thing is that while India crossed 100 million telephones line, something that was developed at a university, the business that it did was $200 million. And that's the kind of business that this is doing. When we thought about 100 million telephones, we had thought that 100 million is sufficiently large that if this is going to happen, it is going to cover every urban area and every rural areas of India. By 2001, I remember that I had come here and I was meeting Colin and Mike Best, probably in 2000 or 2001. We kind of realized that this whole thrust that is taking place is going to be confined to urban area. No business house looked at rural areas as a potential business. They looked at something as a charity. We ourselves came up with a vision statement that we'd like to connect every village of India. And it was a dream that Colin and Mike Best and I shared together, and that's how our friendship started. And we came up with a very innovative business model where we sort of said, well, we'll go and find a entrepreneur in a village to set up an internet kiosk. And we then worked on various technology, made the cost very low, and we started a company called Enlog to sort of drive something like this. Soon we realized that connecting villages is not just about connectivity, it is as much about education, healthcare, and micro enterprises, because that's where today the primary desire in the rural area is, can we get more education? Can we get healthcare? Can we get jobs? And we looked at, can internet provide something like this? And we changed our dream statement from connecting every village to doubling the per capita rural GDP. And we then started incubating a number of companies. We incubated a company which was a multi-party video conferencing, because we are told that there is going to be a serious problem because of lack of literacy. Well, if the literacy is going to be a problem, video will not be a problem. We helped create another company which did an Indian language office package at a much, much lower cost and complete office package. We created a company which did a medical diagnostic kit. Use of video conferencing with doctors sitting in the urban areas, patients sitting in the rural areas, trying to treat them, and create a small kit which will do a remote stethoscope, remote ECG monitoring, remote temperature measurement, remote blood pressure measurement at as low a cost as $250. In trying to set up micro enterprises and trying to get the banks to go to the rural areas, the banks challenged us and sort of said, we'd like to take an ATM to every village, except the cost is just too high. And we created a company which today develops a complete ATM at $1,200 as opposed to something like $15,000 that otherwise the ATM costs. And today is starting to deploy something like this. We realized that use of internet to try to do distributed production, and this is the kind of thing that we have started driving. We, in fact, India has changed very significantly by doing IT-enabled services from urban India for the West. We sort of said that with computer and connectivity and smart people in the rural areas, can they do such IT-enabled services for urban areas? And the slide that I'm showing you is a work done by three or four villages. One village translated the whole material into a local language. Another one did a video recording. Third village did the flash. A fourth village did the integration. And I'm trying to talk about the talent that exists in villages to be able to do something like this. At the same time, we started dreaming that, can we get 50 million broadband connections in India? And while Midas started driving the connectivity solution, we have come with a very, very interesting solution by a company called Noatium, a network PC. It's a very different concept, very low cost, practically no maintenance, sits on a broadband, and something like this we are able to do. We are seeing that the telecom companies in the West is receding and the void is being filled by Chinese companies. And it's here we are looking at, can India build its own billion-dollar product companies? And we are working with several companies with aims of this kind. How do you leverage this changing India? Last part of this. Well, one of the things that we are again committed to, that at least India is looking at, that now that India is starting to do well in many, many things, and especially in technology, can it become the leaders in one or two technology areas? I mean, this is the kind of thinking that has started, and not be among the top one, two, three. Today, it is still not there. And there are attempts being made, like public-private partnerships, creating centers, which can enable something like this, defining standards. And one of the areas that we believe something like this is possible is wireless area. By the way, this suggestion actually came to us from Chinese. The Chinese premier told our prime minister that between India and China, it's about 60% market. And they said that 37% of the people who are working in the wireless area around the world are from Indian origin. Why can't we join together and define the next generation wireless standard? But we have not proceeded in that direction, but definitely we are looking at, can in this area we become the leader? There are several other problems that we need to really, and some big challenges where we have really not made much dent. And if you want to keep on the trajectory that I'm kind of painting, we need to take up these major problems. For example, every year 20 million children enter school in India. And today, very, very small number of people, say children graduate, they don't get good education. So one of the big challenges will be, can technology and all the business model be used to overcome the shortcomings and train all the children? These are big challenges. When we find problems or solutions of the problems like that, then only we'll be able to do something like that. Similarly, as I told you, that I talked about 400,000 engineering students. If you take a non-engineering student, you are once again talking about 3 to 4 million students. Can we really provide good training to them with a very limited amount of teachers, number of teachers being available? Can we use technology for something like this? We are looking at, can India become a product house? Today, it's known as a very, very good place for doing all kind of services. But can it become a Bharat House? Can Indian talent and academia be capitalized for something like that? Can we develop product for low-income emerging markets like India and use that experience to go global? These are the kind of challenges that we in India have. And can we drive dreams like 50 million broadband connections and doubling the per capita rural GDP? We know that anything like this would require not just ICT, but and we may even require to try to define and design very, very interesting decentralized power plant, because the grid, there is no power in many of these villages. And the power supply, even though there is a grid connected, there is the demand in urban areas always exceeds the supply. And what you get in the rural areas is left over. No serious industry can actually work with this kind of situation. There are big challenges. These are technical challenges which I know need to be solved and can be solved in the next 3 to 5 years. These are the kind of challenges that we are working on. I want to end by sort of saying that we have come with a very, very innovative program. We have been beaten up on that, as well as the program is that in India, where 700 million rural people live, there is now a law that every family will at least have one person given a guaranteed employment for 100 days a year. It's one of the biggest social programs that any country has ever envisaged. The problem is, while on the other hand, it has a tremendous potential, you do this, you'll eliminate hunger. You'll be able to build substantial rural infrastructure by doing something like that. One has shown that something like this alone will double the per capita rural income in no time. But the problem is that programs like this are known to be totally caught up in corruption, not being able to... Now, just because there is corruption and just because there is a problem with something like that, there is no reason to sort of say that, well, you give up on programs like this, because there is hunger in spite of... And I think when hunger is there, what it does to the children in particular, what it does to their mental development is something that is simply... We very often don't understand. So we are looking at, can technology be enabled to overcome much of this corruption? Have people really looked at the technology can be used? Can we really design technology which can overcome corruption? Because there is definite desire to try to do something significant. And we talk about some of the technology. I can get into detail. Well, I want to end here since I've already exceeded my time. I believe that India is changing very rapidly. We have to dream big and work hard to realize these dreams. I'm particularly very excited about this kind of situation. First of all, such a large country which 10, 20 years back, nobody thought could have any changes. You suddenly see changes taking place. Number two, we are a very powerful democratic country, very strong democratic tradition. If even people who have been looking at for the last 5 to 7 years, we see somebody who looks totally invincible gets wiped out in election. And this goes on every 6 months in India, in some state or other. Gets wiped out. And very smooth transition of power takes place. I don't think that there are such strong democratic institutions anywhere else. With that kind of thing, with certain value where we still don't consume huge amount of resources, with a desire to stand up, I believe that India can really provide a model for something that the world will really look forward to. And we are very happy to be a part of this big dream. And we know it's a very, very tough challenge. But I do see that in our lifetime, these changes are taking place.
You've been listening to IIT Madras Professor Ashok Jhunjhunwala speaking on May 16, 2006 at Harvard Law School. Audio Berkman is a production of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School, on the web at cyber.law.harvard.edu/audio. I'm Colin McClay. Thanks for listening.